Today I want to talk about the idea that images are the building blocks of our realities. So what we experience in life are a result of the images that we have. The creation of images is a kind of a way to describe the great deal of human activity. When you think of what we do on a daily basis, we create images all the time. Actually, I wrote a sentence a minute ago. Actually, it was a week ago now. When you write a sentence on a piece of paper with a pen, think of it. The words are images. And so I created images on a piece of paper. It's like, oh, yeah, okay. So that's, and now I'm making sound images, audio images with my voice, talking about some images that I had made a week ago. I've referred to human beings as meaning givers in the past. You know, we've heard Neanderthals or Cro-Magnon or other forms of human beings as being tool users and things. I think we're meaning givers, and I could also say that those meanings we convert into images. We're image makers. When we shape matter, energy, space, and time, and frankly, I think that's really the nature of life, shaping those four types of energy, matter, energy, space, and time, we're creating images. We sculpt, we paint, we mold energy using our hands, using our minds, using our imaginations, using our mouths, as I speak now. And the images that we create, they shape our lives. So we shape energy that turns around, and that energy in the form of images shapes our lives. I've had this thought over the years, and so I'm going to describe it in words to see if you can or will consider the images that my words will create. I've wondered if before life begins for us, say, in a physical form, we can almost visualize a plain field that we're going to play out the course of our lives. And so the field is like a completely flat playing field, like a football field, but it's gigantic, except there are no markings on it. There are no lines. There's nothing on the field other than just this flat, open expanse. Then I wonder if when we look at that, we go, you know what? We need to add some challenges, obstacles, traps, quicksand, barriers, some smooth roads, some bumpy roads, some paths that take us where we want to go, and some wrong turns, almost like a maze that we would create. We want to do this in order to make the playing field, that is where our lives are going to be played out, to be more interesting, more exciting, and most importantly, more growthful, so we can grow in awareness, grow spiritually. Then I wonder if we select items and place them on the field in various places. Say we're standing near the closer edge, which would be the beginning of life for us in this particular incarnation. And we go, I need to put some challenges here, or maybe not challenges there. So we place some near the closer edge, which would be our starting point, some maybe in the middle, and then some near the latter point, maybe with more hurdles, more obstacles in the beginning and less in the end, maybe a lot in the middle, maybe less in the end. So you can imagine we could rearrange this playing field in a lot of different ways to suit our purposes. What if we've done that, I wonder, that, you know, we've created a kind of a game board of our own design, that this is the game we're going to play in our lifetimes. It's not a chessboard, and it's not a checkerboard. It's not a Monopoly board. It's not a Parcheesi board. It's a board that is unique to us. So we've populated it with these various items that I've described. And wait a minute. I think we would have also added things to it. If we're fortunate enough, we would have been, say, wise enough to have created allies, you know, people or things that would assist us or images that would help us as we go on in life. Maybe various versions of something you might see in a Monopoly game, right? Get out of jail free cards. Something that is at the last minute, whoop, oh, it saved me from something. So I wonder if we do that. Now, I don't know if any of my wondering is realistic in terms of a pre-life arranging of the board on which we're going to live our lives, but I would think that somehow there's some sort of premeditation having to create this field that we are going to use in order to fulfill the individual purpose that we would have in our lives. What those are is up, I think, to us as individuals to decide. I do believe, you know, despite all that wondering, I do believe that whatever challenges that we face and whatever allies and supports we have in place, those things are created by our individual consciousnesses. I also believe that the purpose of life is spiritual growth toward a higher state of awareness. You know, say go from what I'll call a caveman consciousness to ego consciousness to human consciousness to Christ consciousness. I think that progression is normal, and that's really what we can aspire to. Now, people don't necessarily think in terms of that, or you know, the ego would certainly go, "Hey, this is all about comfort. This is all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me." But above and beyond that, I think there is something higher to aspire to. So, if we are trying to grow our awareness, our state of consciousness, and that is our goal and our purpose, we've got an opportunity to look at the challenges that we are facing daily in life as images that we have created specifically for the purpose of helping us to grow spiritually. Now, I think bottom line for a lot of people is like, I didn't do it. No, I didn't create these images. You know, I'm a victim of circumstances, of genetics, of my race, of my location of birth, of my parents, of my time in history that I've been born. Okay. A person certainly has a right to choose that point of view. I don't subscribe to it personally. I think if we choose to be a volunteer and see ourselves as a volunteer, then we're in a place to volunteer for something different. If we're victims of circumstances, there's pretty much nothing we can do other than hope that something will change our circumstances for us so life would be more pleasant. I like the idea of us having the ability to use our minds and hearts to create the kind of experiences that we want. So if we can look at the challenges that we face as designed by us for the purposes of us growing, I think that idea, that image, can change the game of life completely. If we knew that, we would go, oh, you know, that problem is really a blessing to me, and we would spend very little or no time at all complaining about the discomfort and those challenges. But we would be like, okay, so how do I get the value out of this? How do I find a pearl in this oyster that I'm experiencing? How do I do it so I can learn from it, grow from it, and it can serve me more quickly so I can serve others, so that the pain and the discomfort and the challenges and all the rest of the stuff, the agita that I'm experiencing, can disappear, can heal and disappear. You know, one of the points of the million that I like in Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth seems to be this one, and I think this is true, that anguish and pain and discomfort are really what's required by most people in order to propel them to reach out to God for help. If we're laying on the couch eating bonbons, watching TV, we're not growing any spiritual depth there, because there's no need to reach out for anything. We've got what we want, a comfortable couch, bonbons, and TV. However, if we can reach out, we have a different experience. You know, you can imagine that somebody, like, there's a TV game show, I think, that involves this, their questions, and if that person is certain they know the answer to the question, I know that, you know, that's simple. They don't bother reaching out to, say, an external support to their lifeline, and they answer that question based upon their own personal awareness. It may serve them, may be exactly what they need, but You know, in those times when we're like, I don't have the answer to this question or the solution to this problem or a way to resolve this challenge, I have to reach out. And I think that's when we can really be blessed by that extension of our energy out to a higher level of consciousness, a higher level of awareness. Recently, I had a conversation with my sister, Anne. Anne is my younger sister. And we were talking about going back to our hometown this summer. I'm going to go back with Mary Ann and Nikki and I, and Ann was going to go back too. And so she thought, when she goes back at the same time that I'm going to go back, she started to get all excited about that. She said to me, then we could have a picnic on Granny's beach. My grandmother lived close to a beach. And so we talked a little while later, and then she said, and then we could have a picnic on Granny's beach. So it was clear to me that Anne had positive images about picnics on Granny's beach, right? It's like, And I thought, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. And she said, oh, yeah, I definitely have positive images about that. That's, happy and positive and loving picnics on Granny's beach. I said, I don't have any of those images. I never had a picnic on Granny's beach. So none. If I look in my photo album of my memories, none there with that image on it. So Anne was positively excited about it, and I was neutral. And really, when I think of picnics, I'm basically neutral. I can look at that area near my grandmother's house and at a beach and a creek. I used to go clamming this past summer. I took my children clamming for the very first time there. We had a wonderful time. I used to go crabbing there and swimming there with my brothers and sisters. So it was wonderful from that point of view, but there's nothing in my inventory about picnics. So last week on this call, right afterwards, I had two separate conversations. And those two separate private conversations had to do with images. I'm not going to go into any kind of detail about it, so the two of you can relax about it. But in one case, the subject of a childhood image had come up about an accident that had been replicated in present time. That one image, like, poof, came, right, almost like a recipe on how to live life. I use the word recipe because my wife, Marianne, is cooking for a dinner party tonight, right? And so that recipe is an image of what, boom. And in the other conversations, images of the military, of war, of man's inhumanity to man, all got activated because a letter arrived in the mail. We have these huge inventory of images that are impacting our reality, and in many cases, almost imposing a reality on us. It's this idea of images, or the first time I heard it in the context of the healing codes, had to do with pictures. It said, this is about 11 or 12 years ago. Pictures govern so much of our lives. And so in about two or three sentences with a woman on the telephone from that worked with Alex, I went, wow. That is exactly how my older sister, Daphne, died. She died from pictures. She died from the images that were toxic. She didn't heal them, couldn't heal them, didn't know she needed to heal them, and they corroded her. And then she put her hands, she put herself in the hands of doctors, and they, true to her images, mistreated her ailment and facilitated her death from what they described as cancer. Her children say doctors killed her, not cancer. And I would say they're both right to a certain degree, but Daphne's pictures are really what killed her. They were the source of the problem. And so those images that we have of injustice, of being hated, and hatred, and unforgiveness, and on and on and on and on, unhealthy beliefs, really can distort the body's ability to heal itself. If we think, and I've used this image all the time, of our consciousness as the field or an energetic area that surrounds us, which contains all our hopes and dreams, the fears that we have had and have today, the doubts, the thoughts, the feelings, the words, superstitions, fears, the lies that we've heard and told ourselves and told others, all of our experiences, the prejudices, our beliefs, all the positive things, all the negative things, those energy patterns exist. And it's easy to imagine these things with a plus sign or a minus sign or indicated some way as being neutral to us, kind of like Picnic's word to me a little while ago in that description. I suggest this. I draw a stick figure, I put a large circle around it, and I populate this circle with a bunch of plus signs and minus signs. And you go, okay. I see the stick figure represents you or me, and the circle represents our field of consciousness, this force field around us. And you go, And so these positive and minus signs, negative and positive signs, represent positive and negative images in our consciousness. So here's the problem. When we activate a negative image, we're forced into the position of physiologically having to fight it or run away from it, attacking it or avoiding it. You go, yeah. So those two forms of rejection, fighting it and running away from it, are really what's available to us. Like, that's a problem, that's a problem. Obviously it's a problem because it's stressful and it puts the body on notice that normal functions, say higher cognitive thought, digestion, normalized blood flow, normal breathing, the immune system, cell metabolism, digestion, sex drive, are not priorities. Put them on the back burner. Let's just prepare to survive by fighting or running away. Puts us at a tremendous disadvantage. Here's another set of images that I want to use to try to illustrate how images guide us, but maybe even control us and control our behaviors. The way we think, the way we feel, the way we speak, and the actions we take or will not take or cannot take. You already know about highway construction here in the United States or anywhere else for that matter that's got something other than dirt roads. The lanes are clearly marked, right? So that traffic, when you get in the car and you start driving, you are guided to drive in a lane. You go, yeah. It brings order. It brings a degree of control and management to traffic. It's a good thing. And so it keeps us from, on an unmarked road, for instance, it's like, I can't tell where my lane is and where their lane is. So we know that in order to safely direct the movement of cars, it's a good idea to have these lanes that help us aim our vehicles. Some lanes, like on the interstates that I'm familiar with, they have these little dividers, these things in the road that bumps when your tire hits them. Bum, 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 bum. It's like, I was falling asleep, or it alerted me to the fact that I was drifting out of my lane into another lane. Or sometimes on these highways, if you go off onto the shoulder, they have them all etched, so it's really a rough, it makes the car vibrate. So if you've fallen asleep at the wheel, these things are designed to wake a person up, make them alert to the fact that they are misdirecting their vehicle. It's a good thing in those cases. Here's another part of this imagery that I want you to have. Recall a time when you used to play with magnets. Magnets are fascinating things, right? They're fascinating. So can you imagine and remember when you were amazed, you took two magnets and you got them closer, and then, boom, they snapped together tightly. You know, they were attracted to one another and they held on to one another. And you go, yeah, that's cool. That's what magnets do. But then you turn one over, you reverse the position of one magnet, and then you started to push them together, push them. And instead of snapping together, they repelled one another. You're like, the force field around these magnets, they don't want to go together. They're rejecting one another. They're pushing one another apart. You go, that's interesting. And so you play with that a lot of times, just seeing how that works, snapping together, and other times they're pushing them apart. There's some invisible magnetic force field that wouldn't let us push those things apart when we had them positioned in a certain way. So here's the final step of my illustration. Imagine that the paths in our lives are similar to the roads and highways, and they have invisible magnetic indicators that will pull us forward, attract us like the one side of the magnet, and then there are other situations where they repel us. They don't let us approach those things. When we want to go into a certain direction, you know, to achieve a certain goal, we could only do it if the magnetism, if we were aligned magnetically with the image, and it attracted us and we attracted it, and we would snap together and go, oh, that was easy to achieve that goal. That's remarkable. That was really, really easy. But on the other hand, we also have experience with this. If we're not magnetically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually aligned with our goals, you're like, I don't know. I'm having trouble moving forward. I feel like I'm being repelled. I can't move forward, and nothing is attracting me, and I'm not attracting it. I can't achieve that goal. I can't make progress in my movement toward it. And in those cases, you could look and say, we're failing to reduce the distance between us and our desire, right? We can't reach our goals because I'm not sure why, but something is keeping us apart. I would say this. Our consciousness, that diagram I just described with the circle with the plus signs and the minus signs, the positive images and the negative images, those are magnetic. They draw us to it or they push us apart. It's like, they'll allow us and attract what we want, or they're going to reject and prevent us from moving spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically in that direction on the paths of our lives. We go, whoa, that's what's going on? This is all about electromagnetism? I think so. These images are electromagnetic. So if we were to look at the conditions in our lives right now, we're going like, we could say this, and this is accurate. This is my reality right now. The conditions I've created are the reality of the images that I have maintained within my consciousness. I'm sure everybody on this call is old enough to remember the days of 35-millimeter slides, you know, Kodachrome slides with carousel projectors, for instance. And if you can recall those images right now, this is going to make more sense to you. Projecting light through a 35-millimeter slide, which is has a picture of you, happy, healthy, being safe, loved. You're just so happy. You're beaming with joy, and that's being projected up onto a screen or a wall. You go like, oh, that feels good. That's a pleasant sight. I like that. Yep. On the other hand, imagine this. If that 35-millimeter slide had a picture of you sad, hurt, bitterly disappointed, and that now the picture up on the wall, when you look at it, you're like, oh, wow, I feel bad again. In these two scenarios, let's consider this. The projector remained the same. The light remained the same. The wall or the screen that the picture was projected onto remained the same. The structure of the 35-millimeter slide, paper rim, right, with plastic in the center, remained the same. However, the image on the slides changed. And that made the projected images up on the wall be different. So we could say that the reality of the image we're seeing up on the wall is due to the image on the slide. And that's true. In life, we could say this. The conditions we have projected into existence onto the screens of our lives are due to the invisible images that we hold in our minds and our hearts through which we project light. You go, wow, that kind of makes me like the carousel with this enormous number of slides, this enormous number of images in my inventory about money, about sex, about my body, about people, about God, about life, about opportunity, about work, about plants, about air, about water, about food, about homes, about cars, about... We have to have millions of images in our inventory. We are one huge carousel. Go, whoa. Now, if we had a little child who is seeing this technology for the very first time, right, that child may run up to the wall and go, ah, I don't like that picture. I got to change the picture. And they'd be poking at the wall and trying to put their hands over it so they couldn't see it. And like, thinking it is the image on the wall that's the reality. But you and I, being more sophisticated, we would go, yeah, that's just a projection. Really, if we want to change that, what we do is we change the image that we're projecting light through. That we would want to change, if we want to see a different image in our lives, a different condition in our lives, a different thing that exists in our lives, we're going to want to change the image that we're projecting light through. It's like, yeah. What we think about, what we feel, what we speak, and what we do, yeah, that's what we want to do. We can use our minds for that. When you think about it, this images, when you, right? Religions are really systems of images established for the purposes of control of and management of people, right? You say that about a lot of different things. Laws. You go, the Ten Commandments. Apparently, the Israelites making their way from out of Egypt were really a difficult and unruly group of people. They're just like people, right? You get a group of people, they're pretty much going to be unruly, I would think. And you go, And so here, we got to follow these rules. And that structure, those set of images, are designed to help people be managed or controlled or to manage themselves or to control themselves. People have been using images for everything, for thousands upon thousands of years. We use images of God, right, over human history. My God told me I have to kill you because you have a different God than I have. And, you know, and so I can justify it because my God is better than your God. My image of my God says, yeah, sure, smite those people. Like, millions of people have been killed because of somebody's image of God. Our war in Iraq, right? What was that about? False images of weapons of mass destruction. They got weapons of mass destruction. Look at what a terrible image. Oh, what a terrible image. We got to go to war. We have to kill these people. Oh, yeah. Because who knows what could happen. But because it was false, and nobody really objected to that, or not enough people, obviously, in order to prevent it, hundreds of thousands of people have died as a result of that, killed because false images. And you can see how these images happen here in the United States, right? That person's of a different color. Their immigration status is different. They have a different headgear. They have a different skin color. They have a different accent. They have a different religion. Oh, they have a different name for God. All these different images cause us to go into fear, and then we act more like cavemen than highly evolved people. We recognize that images are used to manipulate people into certain behaviors, and it's been true for thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years. We do it even today. You and me, we do it even today. So you go, the Old Testament, filled with images. And a lot of those, I think they're false. Yeah, God has favoritism of one person over another, or of one people over another. those images have justified a lot of stuff over the years. Here, how about this one? The image of Eve as the temptress of poor innocent Adam. And because she did that, I have an image that she's the cause of all human suffering. And, that certainly justifies the unbelievable mistreatment of women over 2,000 years in Christianity and probably another 1,000 or so years in Judaism. Hey, I have this image of her as the trouble. She's the source, so now I can be cruel to women. Whoa, not that evolved. The story of Cain's murder of his brother Abel, based upon images. God loved Abel more than he loved Cain. And so those images and the fact that it's interpreted that material possessions are the means to happiness, all those images, like, wow, goofy, beyond goofy, dangerous, really. People all over the world have terrifying images of a God who will punish them if they're not obedient to the rules that are established by whom? By the Jews, by the Catholics, by the Baptists, by the Presbyterians, by the Lutherans, by the Muslims, by the Methodists, by the Mormons, by the Anglicans, by other image-making sects. And there are a whole bunch of them. Jehovah's Witnesses, and it goes, Moonies, and it goes on and on. Next time you sit down to watch television, look at the advertising and notice the happy images associated with buying a product. And before a person buys that product, unhappy. Because they're unhappy, they need the product so they could have this image of being happy. That's how we get manipulated. It's amazing. But here's another thing to notice when you watch that advertising. In all of those broadcasted images, notice the imbalance between these two concepts, getting and giving. Getting and giving. There are so many more images about getting, acquiring, buying, consuming, eating, owning, to achieve happiness and success than there are about giving to produce happiness and success. And I think all these images about getting are really traps. They're traps. They're like a spider web. I got to get some more stuff. And then we go into the trap, into the spider web, so we can be used for somebody else's revenue purposes or influence purposes or control purposes. Personally, I think there are a couple of images that are tremendously valuable that we can refine to suit our own purposes and use them. The image of a divine intelligence, God, divine consciousness, supreme being, any label that you want that helps you formulate this image. This divine consciousness that is seeking to work for us, in us, and through us, to express love in the forms of growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, in a world of rhythms governed by spiritual law and order, to me, is the most helpful image you can have. God as only loving and benevolent. Only loving and benevolent. No judgment, no obedience, no punishment, no hurt, no favoritism, just pure love and benevolence. And the second image, maybe the second most helpful image, is this one. You and me being quiet and reaching out in thought and feeling to this power, this intelligence, this divine consciousness, this God, and asking for enlightenment, understanding, awareness, comfort, healing, and help. So help to be more loving to others and to ourselves. So if we can be a better channel of the divine working through us, as well as it working for us and in us, we're going to experience a whole different level of health, happiness, and success. And as a role model, we're contributing tremendously. We are, as we give, we're giving more than just this love. We're giving an image that other people can embrace. Wow, I want what you have. How do you do that? And we could use these last couple of concepts. Have an image of a loving God, only loving, not capable of anything other than love. And I think we can then turn around and make more images for ourselves, of ourselves, and other people that improve our lives, and improve our lives, not just for ourselves, but for other people as well. And we have those images, they will draw us to them. They'll be that positive magnet that advances us toward our spiritual growth, our physical growth, our mental growth, our emotional growth, our financial growth, our health, all the purposes that we could imagine that a person would actually come into life to experience. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. In letter 8, Christ says, take in the consciousness of these words, I say to you and me. Take in the images of these words, of this. What images could I take into my consciousness that make this realer and realer, so that how I operate and how you operate in life is informed by the consciousness of these images? We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. What image can you have of yourself in which you believe and know that this is possible? That's got to be an image with much less stress in it than we would experience normally. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. So it is. Thank you. Amen.